Hello and welcome to the Freight Find podcast, your source for all things transportation. Freight Find is brought to you by DATIQ. With the freight market changing daily, DATIQ has the most accurate rate data and forecasting analytics that help businesses stop guessing and plan for the road ahead. Find out more at DAT.com/IQ. I'm Chris Kaplis, Chief Scientist at DAT Freight and Analytics, and today I'm joined by Frank McQuiggan, the Chief Executive Officer of Transplace. As everyone listening to this podcast probably already knows, Transplace is a $3 billion logistics and transportation technology and services company. Frank joined Transplace in 2011 when it acquired SCO Logistics, where he had been president and CEO. Since joining Transplace, Frank has been instrumental in tripling revenue and growing the company through product expansion, strategic acquisitions, and increased geographic presence across North America and Europe. He became CEO in 2018, and Frank has more than 30 years of experience in executive leadership, supply chain operations, and commercial leadership. So he has a lot to say on the industry and the market. Following my conversation with Frank, I'll be joined by Dr. Enam Ayoub to discuss the truckload market update. So let's get started. Hi, Frank. Welcome to the Freight Find podcast.
Hey, good morning, Chris. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for taking the time to come and join me today. My first question, though, I have to ask, how did a guy from the Merchant Marine Academy end up in trucking? That must have been a strange path. Can you fill us in on that?
Sure, but only if you promise to answer, how does a guy from BMI end up at MIT? certainly. And so the way we look at it is goods in motion are goods in motion. Right. And so certainly coming out of the Merchant Marine Academy, you have a degree in logistics. But, you should know we were part of the curriculum there, very, very heavy math and science curriculum, but also very heavy logistics curriculum. And so we were Malcolm McLean, intermodalism and following that stuff all the way through school. And I'm sure you're aware in the last really 30 years has been a tremendous evolution in logistics and certainly globally, but also in North America specifically. And so coming out of school, worked for the Port of Philadelphia in an operations capacity, bringing ships in, cargo ops, those types of things. Was recruited to join a company where the COO was a Kings Pointer and went through their PDP program. Was supposed to go into operations, ultimately ended up in sales and worked there for a few years, left the industry for a couple of years, and then ended up at one of the big major asset-based 3PLs and spent a lot of time there, but really focused at that time on their non-asset-based transportation management division. It had me work with a couple of partners on wanting to start our own business in that regard. And so we had found this company called SCO Logistics, who were private equity funded out of Kennett, Pennsylvania. They had actually bought the rights and the code to a software called ShipLogix. And what we were doing is I went in and kind of wrapped the service around it and really kicked that off and evolved from being just a value-added reseller of tech to a real, what I would say, a logistics services and technology company, or a logistics technology and services company, however you want to say it. And then Transplace came knocking. I mean, that's the short story.
It's funny how things all work out, though.
They do.
So you joined Transplace just about 10 years ago. I think it'll be 10 years next year.
That's correct.
How has that company changed over that time period?
The company very much the same. If you look at the very core of the business back in the day, there was certainly a large technology component to it. It was more of a technology than a tech and services company, right, at one point. But in the time since I've been here, that's 20 years ago, or actually probably closer to 25 years at this point. The time that I've been here, the company has grown significantly, right? And so I think we're 2,800 people now in total across all of our products, versus 750 when I got here. We're $11.5 billion of freight under management versus, I want to say, 3 to 4. Significantly more modal depth, rail going through the business with our rail control center, but also parcel, bulk truck, et cetera, et cetera. So the control tower and the platform expands across and more deeply than it did when I first got here. We have geographical depth, much larger in Mexico and Canada. As you're aware, Chris, we actually started in Europe in 2020. And so those are all things that have occurred in the last 10 years. And we've had the benefit of having terrific private equity partners that have allowed us to invest and acquire all the way through to kind of get that kind of growth. From an IT standpoint, you know, I'm sure you're well aware. I know you've known our company for a long time. It's more than just a TMS now. You have to be a platform. And what I mean a platform is the TMS is the underlying execution technology, but you have to have the control tower sitting on top that's going to give you the ability to provide visibility and cross-network collaboration and AI and health scores, et cetera, et cetera. And so one of the major moves that we made in 2020 was actually decoupling the TMS from that aspect of our business so that people could get low barrier to entry access to TransPlace tech and information without actually sitting on our TMS as well.
So does that mean you market the TMS separately as well as the platform or the control tower? Are they can be bundled, but you offer them each independently now?
That is correct. And so our primary focus is to grow the network the way we've always grown the network. And I'm very proud to say that 2020 was another record sales year for the company, even in this environment. But we also know that there are large shippers, let's say Fortune 100 shippers that are tied to legacy systems that need some of the emerging technology that's occurred over the last 5 years, specifically in North America. And since we have to add that to our platform anyhow, we've decoupled, say, the visibility and the control tower and the data insights, also that they have the ability to get to that without actually running their shipments through our TMS.
So I had Jeff Silver on the show a couple weeks back, and he's now with Mastery, which is a new TMS startup. I don't know why he's working anymore. He doesn't need to work. But he kind of talked about the different technologies and trying to fix the TMS situations as well. So if someone had that or another TMS from Manhattan or something else, they could still go into the platform and the control tower? Or would they just have limited functionality? Or how would that work?
Yeah, no. What they would use our system for would, they would want to join the community because we have a significant, as I had referenced earlier, significant freight spend in the community. B, they would use that for metrics, insights into what's going on in the community from a benchmarking standpoint, et cetera. They'd be able to get visibility there. They'd be able to participate in dynamic continuous moves or even static continuous moves using our LaneHub acquisition. All of those opportunities at the higher level without actually sitting in the TransPlace routing guide and the execution coming through the TMS.
Right. Now, 2020 has been a very busy year for you, not just in terms of the volume of business going through in sales, but you've made some big acquisitions. And I imagine most of those were kind of in the works before the pandemic really hit. But it's LeanCore you just announced recently, LaneHub and ScanData. How do those fit in? Or is this just because the CEO is bored during a pandemic and decides to acquire new companies?
I would say that I was not bored, that's for sure. And so running a company, and I'm sure everybody's told you this, Chris, this has been a very long year for CEOs and very long year for everybody in companies, especially service-intensive businesses like ours, where things haven't really slowed down. And so we started all of these conversations prior to the pandemic, that's for sure. And so LaneHub was done at the very beginning of the year. And candidly, if you go back to my comments around providing low barrier to entry access to TransPlace technology, LaneHub's work and on creating what I would consider to be lane matching in a static way through their technology, we thought was important, and we thought it would be a terrific match to the TransPlace community of shippers, as well as to the shippers that they had in that community, and so. That has been very successful for us in merging those two communities together and really just trying to find either private fleet or lanes that are complementary And you can see in the world that we live in, and especially in 2020, you can see kind of the sine curve that's occurred as it relates to both freight volume as well as freight pricing. And it works no matter what, right? And so companies want to work with other companies on complementary lanes, both from a sustainability standpoint, and candidly, they want to have capacity that's not going up and down and is less volatile.
Right. That's always been the holy grail, right, Frank, to find those continuous moves between companies, closed loop tours. And it's been very hard to put together. So how does Transplace do that? Because I understand that LaneHub might be able to identify them. And that's the easy part, to be honest. The hard part is keeping it working. How does Transplace keep the relationship working between multi-company collaborations like that?
No, and so we look at it two ways. It's a very good question. And you're right, it is the holy grail. And we spend a lot of time and money on this. And so the first is we call it static continuous moves, and that's the LaneHub acquisition. And that's the engineered method of doing it. And pretty much saying, you know, I have 15 loads a week from Philly to Chicago. Company A, Company B has 12 loads a week from Chicago back to Philly, and the pickup times are a little bit flexible, and you engineer that between the two companies to make that work, right? And also to provide a backup if in fact the first part of that leg doesn't work. And that engineered solution is mostly of what LaneHub does. In addition to that, and you monitor like you monitor any other shipment, and if it's not working, then you have to spring into action and make sure that the freight is covered. That's part of what we do every day here anyhow, as I'm sure you're well aware. The second part is dynamic continuous moves, and that's taking what's going on in the network on a daily basis. And, you know, if you look at the scale of shipments we have coming into and out of different nodes across the country, it's significant. And so we partnered with a company called Noodle AI a couple of years ago, and put that in what we call our Transplace Network Services business or area of the company. And for companies that sign up for this service, in essence, what they're saying is, if there's something on our routing guide that can be displaced by a continuous move that brings me service and cost value, you have autonomy to do that for me, Transplace. And so that has been happening for a couple of years. And what really happens is that AI captures the first issue that we had was it captured so much it was barely executable, if that makes sense. And where the AI and where the AI comes into play is it's scrubbing actual performance and match data based off of various factors to determine which are the best fit. Operating requirements of the shippers, distance between destination and origin, time of the day of the week, weather, likelihood of the carrier to accept, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we execute that way. And again, then we continue to load the success back into the system to make that happen. So it's a holy grail. It remains incredibly difficult, right. But it's happening, and it's happening in a big way. And what we find is our most sophisticated shippers, high volume shippers, are really into this. They're both into both dynamic and static continuous moves, and they want to see the value of this in their network. I do think it's worth mentioning, though, that this is the 15% solution to the network, right? And right. In that most shippers would rather have terrific routing guide discipline with carriers that we have vetted together that are delivering a predetermined price and service for them. This is for spot freight. This is for accepted freight or freight that the SRG rejected for whatever reason, and for parts of the network where they're having difficulty, like tail freight, low volume lanes, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
That's where it's most interesting to shippers. I think, though, that ultimately that will expand.
Yeah, no, it makes sense that's where it is, because that's where most of their problem comes in. But, I mean, continuous moves, I Reynolds Metals was writing about them in 1985, right, and implementing them. But one of the big challenges they always had was that the carrier wouldn't always want it, right? Because I'm a carrier. My driver's coming home. I'm bringing him into Atlanta. The last thing I want to do is reload him and send him out at a discount. Is that fit into that, the carrier's perspective, or is that not an issue anymore?
Well, that's part of why, you know, the AI has to find carriers that have a higher degree and make choices with carriers that have a higher degree of acceptance, number one. Number two, it absolutely still remains an issue. And what happens is that carriers get into inflationary markets where shippers will want to pay for anything. And that freight becomes less acceptable to them or less interesting to them. Our view, and Transplace, as you're well aware, buys billions and billions of dollars of freight every year. Much more that's actually than on our top line, but we secure it and actually hand the paper over to our shippers in a lot of instances. A growing part of doing business with Transplace is how you're going to live in our ecosystem, how you're going to participate in that, what kind of information are you going to provide for us in that ecosystem from a visibility standpoint, and obviously service and cost, right? And so I believe that the world will move more towards wanting carriers to live inside of platforms so that they can maximize their operating ratios and make money.
Interesting. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it filters out. But I don't think anyone sees the carrier market consolidating or the number of shippers. But the question is, the brokers or third parties in the middle, will that contract? That's really an interesting question.
I think they will all. First of all, I think it's happening already with large third party brokers. You just don't have visibility to it. It shows up on their profit line, not the shipper savings line, if that makes sense. The second thing is that we really want carriers to live in our network. It's super important to us. We want carriers to reduce empty miles. We want them to obviously reduce emissions. We want our entire network to be very much a place where shippers can be treated fairly, paid fairly, not held back on accessorial charges, and find that right shipper carrier balance to deliver what's best for both parties.
Well, that kind of leads into the next question, which is, how do you differentiate what Transplace does as one of the major platforms? How are you differentiating against the traditional broker, CHR, Coyote, or the digital guys, the Uber Freights, Convoys, and Transfixes? How does that work?
Well, you know, I would say that the differentiation is significant. You know, first of all, there's more than just brokers offering what I would consider to be logistics technology and services. There are many asset-based players doing it as well, especially global ones. Secondly, we're the largest and we're going faster than these companies, but larger isn't necessarily better. Listen to what I just discussed around what we've done with AI. Look at the acquisitions that we've made. We've doubled our investment in the platform over the last 3 years under the TPG holding period. And it is what we do as an organization. We're not a company that's trying to broker freight primarily and then be a TMS secondarily, or a managed transportation service provider secondarily. And they're two very different business models.
Right.
We would be much richer if we were making $200 a transaction on every shipment that went through our system, right? And so our job is to find that supply and demand balance in the system, drive empty miles out of the system, ultimately to the benefit of the carrier. Shippers hire us to do exactly that. Deliver technology, visibility, speed, nimbleness at the lowest possible price point in the marketplace.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Let me ask about the current environment, not the pandemic yet, but over the last 3 to 4 years, I say since the 2017-2018 last capacity crunch before the current one, it seemed like shippers, 3PLs, and carriers seemed a little more amenable to experimenting and not doing, I'm going to put everything in the damn bid, one size fits all, get in the routing guide. There seemed to be more experimentation and collaboration between shippers and carriers. We're using different type of contracts, whether it's index-based, shorter terms, whatever. I'm curious if you've noticed that, and I don't know if I'd call it a thawing of the relationships, but all sides more open to experimentation. Have you seen that? And if so, how have you seen that?
We have seen that. And so what's driving that behavior? Ultimately, you know, just in, let's say the last 10 years, but really concentrated in the last 5 years, there, to me, it seems like there's been greater volatility than ever before in shipping pricing, especially in the spot market. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially now. We'll talk about the pandemic, but it's crazy right now.
Right. And so what's driving that? To me, what's driving that is access to shippers and carriers, but especially carriers have more access to information than they've ever had. And they can actually see what's happening in the market at different parts of the country, and they can respond accordingly to chase profit. And I think that all of that has driven more, I would say, transparent type, the seeking of more transparent type relationships, right? And so our belief is, you know, I read somewhere, and people believe different things. I read somewhere, you know, some companies believe that ultimately shippers will buy everything on the spot market. I have no confidence that that's in fact the case. I think, though, they are looking for transparency in the areas of the market, the tail freight, their underutilized parts of their own network, et cetera, where they at least can manage risk to make sure that they get both capacity and a reasonable price during times of gross inflation. I think what that does for the carriers is it gives them predictability as it relates to how they're going to utilize their assets and allows them to deploy accordingly during those times. And we both know that cost doesn't follow price as it relates to the carriers. And so transparency works for both parties in that instance. And we've always been huge proponents of it.
No, that makes sense. It's what we try to teach up here at MIT, and we have research projects looking at this. It's that whole portfolio of ways you can work with a carrier. And on one end is the spot, right, at the pure transaction. Then you have all the contracting. And then on the far other side, you have dedicated. And I think everyone wants to push it to the left, to dedicated as much as possible, because it's more stable and only have those things on the right that you need. But I also have had discussions with different people where they think it's going to go, you know, majority spot for that and just ride the market, which I don't see that either. I see just the opposite. People want to try to move things to dedicated, whether they're part of a dedicated solution. They're not running the dedicated fleet, but stability, reliability, consistency seem to always be the preferred solution than riding that spot market.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it that way, the way I compare it to the commodities market, if you look at the way a shipper buys resin, the way a shipper buys natural gas to run their plants, right? Shippers absolutely prefer predictability of cost versus riding the market. You can't budget, you can't deploy capital, you can't do anything if you have no idea what you're going to spend in these major spend areas on an annual basis. So, that's why I ultimately believe in some sort of futures market in this industry. I know it's collect. I know it's or difficult, but figuring out basis would be difficult, et cetera. But I believe that if you give a shipper a choice and you engineered a solution that showed them, you know, slight inflation 1 year, slight deflation the following year, but also for their tail freight or their sophisticated freight, you could buy futures. I think that's something that's interesting to them. In the meantime, transparency and cost-plus relationships or different sophisticated pricing mechanisms to service that are going to be very interesting to both them and the carrier community.
I agree. The interesting thing about your commodity comparison is that it's true. Trucking is a commodity, but it's one of those, it's a service. So therefore, it has two moments of truth in purchasing. The annual bid where, quote, is allocated or acquired or awarded. But then when it actually gets tendered, and that gap between that can be huge. We're working with some carriers now to try to identify that ghost freight that they want it in the bid and it never materializes, or just the opposite. It wasn't in the bid, but suddenly a new DC, new customers came in. It's there. So there seems to be the crux of it is that we procure it two different times, and that creates confusion in the market. But it's interesting to see how that works. So let me, last set of questions. I don't know if you knew this, but we're in the middle of a pandemic. And it's obviously had impacts across everything, personal, health, business. Last question. And I ask this of everyone, silver linings. So pandemics, we're in what, month seven now?
Yeah.
Seven or eight. So things have changed. People say, you know, the 3 years of digital transformation happened in 3 weeks, things like this. Have you seen any silver linings, things you've had to do during the pandemic that you think will stick later on and have an impact on your business?
Sure. First of all, and I'll leave the personal stuff out of it, but my wife is ready for the world to go back to traveling, which is so it is. It's been 20 years since I've been as home as often as I am right now. And that is a personal silver lining because I still have kids in school, et cetera. And so, but professionally for sure. And I do think that the adoption of the technology that's available to you from a Zoom, GoToMeeting, Microsoft Teams, et cetera, to successfully engage in work has the adoption curve was just moved forward in our company 18 months. And it further, I fundamentally believe that we had a sales year where our close ratio went up 10 points. It was a record sales year. And part of me feels that the amount of time lost on airplanes and running around and really focusing on customer networks and value had a positive impact on the way we went about that part of our business this year. And so same with continuous improvement and strategic account management, right? All of our operators travel. We want to be in front of our customers. We want to be in their plants. We want to be in their boardrooms. And our inability to do that, the dividend associated with that, candidly, was more work on the work that's in front of us. And I think that's been incredibly positive. So we have to find that balance, right? And we will. It's never going back to the way it was. I agree with your earlier assertion. But we will find that balance as an organization so that we can continue to work in a way that delivers the value that we want to deliver as a company.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you, Frank. I really appreciate you spending some time with us this morning.
My pleasure, Chris. Good luck to you, and thank you for the invitation.
Great. Okay, everyone, stay tuned for the Truckload Market Update with Dr. Enam Ayoub. Let's take a brief pause to talk about the FMIC Pulse Signal Report from DAT. Formerly part of Chainalytics, the Freight Market Intelligence Consortium, or FMIC, is now part of DAT Freight and Analytics. FMIC Pulse members receive monthly reports based on their subscription, which includes DAT IQ's proprietary forecasting approach to predicting the future of North American truckload markets. Are rates dropping? Is the market getting tighter? How should I approach next year's transportation budget? All of these questions and more are answered in the FMIC Pulse Signal Report. Visit DAT.com/PulseSignal and fill out the form for a free limited view of the report. And become a member of FMIC to receive unlimited access. All right, let's get back to it.
Welcome to the Over-the-Road Truckload Market Update for November 19th, 2020. In today's market update, we will discuss the market changes in the last 2 weeks. Let's start with dry van. Active rates are up 2%, spot rates down by 1.3%, and the replacement rate is positive 8%. This means that the new contract rates are about 8% above the rates being replaced. On the temp control side, active rates are up 0.5%, spot rates are flat, and the replacement rate is positive 6%. Finally, on the intermodal side, active rates up 2%, spot rates are down 1%, and the replacement rate is positive 6%.
Wow. So this is a little bit of a difference now. We've seen a little bit of the flipping, right, with the spot rates kind of slowing down and the active rates, placement rates picking up. So what's going on here, Enam?
Yeah, I think the definitely the spot market's cooling off. And obviously from the past discussions, we know that the active rates, it takes time. It takes time to slow down. So if this spot rates cooling off holds on for another few weeks, then we will see the impact of that, where the active rates will start to flatten out.
And what about the volume? How do you see the year-over-year volume so far?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the overall year-over-year volume is in par, with respect to the previous month of the same year. And however, what we are seeing is we always talked about it's different across the different industries. So what we see is retail and consumer products are up 13% and 10.6% respectively. On the other hand, food and bev is down about 7%, and the industrial is actually the one that took the biggest hit, which is about 24% down.
Yeah, that makes sense. And we probably will see some other things because there's new rounds of lockdowns coming down across different states, and different states are doing it differently. How do you think that's going to impact things?
Yeah, I think we're seeing the similar kind of impact all over again. I mean, we're seeing, in some areas, the grocery, the shelves are getting empty, and the essential retail stores are, limiting their hours, right? And also the limiting the number of people getting into the store. So we have seen this before. However, we are obviously, the level of panic is not as much as what we had, what we saw the first time around. I think people got used to it. And then there's also the Thanksgiving, the number of people that could go to, to a place, all that's coming along. So I think end of the day, I think we have been this one time. So end of the day, I think people are going to switch to retail. Online buying. I think that's where the biggest shift's going to take place.
Sure. And that's going to continue because we've seen that trend, whether it's buy online, pick up in store, or have it delivered directly. Yeah, we're seeing that definitely increasing throughout the pandemic, and we're not seeing it going away anytime soon.
Exactly. So with that concludes this week's Truckload Market Update. Thank you.
Well, that wraps up this episode of Freightvine. Freightvine is hosted by Dr. Enam Ayoub and myself, Chris Kaplis, and is produced and edited by DTIQ. For more information or to hear previous episodes, please visit our website at dat.com/podcasts. You can subscribe to Freightvine wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, be sure to give us a review. If you have any feedback or questions about what you've heard on the Freightvine, or suggestions for what you'd like to hear in the future, please send me an email at chris.kaplis@dat.com. This industry always has more to teach us, so don't miss the DATIQ live show every Tuesday morning. Tune in to hear from three of the finest minds in freight: Ken Adamo, Chief of Analytics at DAT, Ned Damon, Principal Data Scientist at DAT, and Dean Croak, Principal Analyst at DAT. Follow us on LinkedIn and YouTube to watch Ken, Ned, and Dean brave the airwaves with a live broadcast every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. They bring you the week's market trends and analysis so you can have the intelligence you need to make the best decisions for your business. Finally, from all of us here at the Freightvine, thank you for joining us, and we hope you learned something new.